Hey, welcome to the VBAC Link. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We are truly so grateful for this community and all the support in listening to the show. Before we get started, I wanted to plug in another amazing show that you should go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It is episode 406, where co-founder of Needed, Julie, and I talk more about health, especially during our conception years. We talk more on choline and how important it is, yet how often it is being missed completely. In fact, most prenatal vitamins that you find in the store shelves contain either zero choline or barely any at all. And getting enough from food alone can be difficult. It would take at least 3 to 4 eggs a day to meet the adequate intake of choline. And new research is pointing to the fact that moms may need almost double that amount for optimal outcomes. In this episode, Julie mentions about 95% of moms are not meeting their choline needs. Choline supports babies' neural tube formation and cognitive development, and as well as mothers' healthy metabolism and mood. So getting enough is key. If you are among so many of us who are not getting enough, I highly suggest checking out Needed's Prenatal Choline. You can get 20% off your first order with code VBAC. That is VBAC at thisisneeded.com. Don't forget to go back after this episode and listen to 406 to learn even more information on choline. All right, let's dive in. Hello, everybody. I am going to be sharing our friend Lindsay's story with you guys today. This is actually a rebroadcasted show. So it's just one of those extra shows that we went back, we listened to, and we were like, ooh, there are some extra things that we want to share with you guys. So in the story, Lindsay had a cesarean. And then she went in and with her cesarean, she was very much told what she was going to be doing. And we know here at the VBAC Link that that's not really what we love. We deserve to be spoke to and be part of the decision making. And so with her second, she went a very different route. She decided to really dive in and get the education. She kind of mentions in the show that she's like, if someone said to do it, I did it. And, you know, you don't have to always do what everybody says, but there are things that people do and share, and they share it for a reason because they believe that it helped them get their VBAC. So a couple of things that stood out to me with this story is that she actually conceived 9 months after her baby was born, which means her baby was 18 months apart. Now, in the episode, she talks about her provider, you know, that she barely squoze by getting the clear to VBAC by her provider's suggestions. This is a very big question in the community. Can I still have a VBAC if my babies are less than 18 months apart? And the answer is yes. We will have a whole blog listed in the show notes today for you, so you can go read more about what the studies show. And the studies do vary. There's different studies out there that kind of make it conflicting, but overall they're showing, you know, 18 to 24 months is the most ideal, but we know that many people do go on and VBAC even less than 18 months apart. So check out that blog. Another thing I noticed was that she truly labored at home as long as possible. And so some of the tips that I want to give to you, if this is something that you desire, is hiring your team. So she had her doula, and it was actually during COVID, and so she couldn't have her doula at the hospital. So I think this was probably an extra win to have labor at home, is because she could have her doula. They did things like abdominal lifting. That is where you put your hands underneath the belly and lift up and kind of in and tuck in. It's a reset position. It's a great position if you're having kind of a stall in labor, or you are experiencing a posterior baby, or maybe think you got an asynclitic baby, you can do an abdominal lift. So she showed up to the hospital when she was pretty much 10 centimeters ready to go. And she actually pushed for a really long time. And she talks about advocating for yourself. And if something doesn't feel right, like, it's okay to question. And if someone's suggesting something, it's okay to question that. And if it doesn't feel right with what they're suggesting, it's okay to say no. And so I love the tips that she gave in here, advocating for yourself, laboring at home as long as you can. But be educated, laboring at home as long as you can. It is important to be educated, know the signs, know what your body's doing, know when it's time to go. And obviously, having a team, it really helped her in that situation. And then earlier on, I think it was with her first, she talked about the sterile water injection. So this is something that a lot of people do not talk a lot about. So I wanted to quickly go over that. So they like to do these injections when moms are specifically having back labor or for pain relief. And there is a little review here that I wanted to kind of go over, and it talks about the evidence reviews for sterile water injections. It says that the evidence review was developed using the methods and processes described, and that is pretty much the use of injection of sterile water that has been suggested as an effective method to treat back pain for women in labor. It goes on and it talks about the overall sterile water injection, like what it showed. It says overall sterile water injection showed an important benefit over saline injections in terms of back pain during labor. The quality of the evidence ranged from very low to moderate, with similar distribution between low and moderate and slightly more outcomes rated as very low. Most of the evidence was downgraded for indirectness due to not reporting on risk status or whether labor was induced. So it goes on and on and on. So we want to talk about the risks. Okay, so the risks are generally pretty low, and the SWI, so the sterile water injections, are considered pretty safe. So some of the risks are infection. Now, anytime we are puncturing the skin or putting anything in our body, there's risk of infection. So there's something, to be said with that. It also, she talked about the bee sting, and she said it's a little bit more than a bee sting. So it can cause some pretty intense stinging sensation or even burning. Sometimes it goes in and it stings in the going in, and then it kind of burns. But overall, it goes away usually. It can kind of get some, swelling and itchiness. We're disturbing the skin. We're injecting stuff into our body. So SWIs are injected into the lumbar area in the back. A lot of people will do this instead of an epidural sometimes. So that's something to know. If you're not wanting the epidural, maybe you go with an SWI. However, I do want to point out that it doesn't always reduce all the pain. It might just kind of minimize it a little bit, and they don't have a really long duration. It doesn't last for hours and hours and hours and hours like an epidural does. So they're pretty quick. They don't really affect your ability to move like an epidural does. And they have been shown to reduce back pain in labor. So check out the SWIs. Rebecca Decker, she actually had a blog on this as well. And so I figured I would include that as well so you can get all the information on SWIs. In her conclusion, she says, "It seems the sterile water injections do offer benefits for helping relieve pain, although the procedure itself may be uncomfortable. However, they're all at are evidence-based ways to lower discomfort of the procedure." So it says in some countries around the world, sterile water injections are commonly accepted as a way of helping someone manage their pain. Like I said, they come into play to essentially replace or be a step before an epidural. She says the bottom line seems to be that the evidence does not or does support that the use of sterile water injections for helping manage pain in labor, especially back labor. So, you guys, if you are wanting to know more, go to the show notes today after hearing the episode. Check it out. But after listening to this, I was like, you know what? We don't talk a lot about that. I thought it would be really awesome to share a little bit more about that. So, without further ado, I am going to turn the time over to our rebroadcasted show from Lindsay. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
All right, let's get to it. We have Lindsay with us today. Lindsay's an advertising account director and a mom of two. She loves being a mom and thinks bringing a baby Earthside is one of the most surreal experiences that we have as mothers. Childbirth is the best lesson a mother can experience, she says. A lot's out of our control, so plan for the worst and hope for the best. Do you know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of when I was in the military. Just plan for the worst, hope for the best, because I don't know if anybody out there listening is in the military or a military spouse or has ever been in the military, but you know that whenever things can go wrong, if there's possibility, then it probably will go wrong. So you've got to just kind of expect not very much, but hope for great things. So this just reminded me of that when I was just reading your bio, Lindsay. But I like that sentiment because you can prepare for all of the things, right? You can prepare for all the outcomes, but always hope for and even expect the best outcomes as well. So I love that. But Lindsay, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit more and share your story with us?
Awesome. Thanks so much, Julie. So I'll start with my pregnancy and then birth of my son, which was my first C-section. So it took us a while to get pregnant with my son. We thought that it was going to be quite simple, and it turns out it wasn't. And so with a little bit of help from a fertility specialist, we successfully got pregnant. We were so excited. And he recommended that we be handed over to the care of midwives. I had a low risk pregnancy. I was in great shape, healthy, you know, a strong BMI. And so he felt like this would be the best care provider for what I needed. And then also, you know, my style, he loved that and recommended that we have someone who would be really guiding throughout. He also recommended that I ask them about home birth, which was probably unexpected for most coming from more of a traditional Western medicine perspective. So we started on with the midwives. We loved them instantly, and home birth was brought up pretty early on. And so we had planned for a home birth. And in this, my biggest learning was that we really focused on the home birth and the realities of a home birth. And we didn't necessarily talk about labor preparation. So I had read Ina Mae Gaskin's Guide to Childbirth, and I had chatted with friends who had gone through labor, especially natural labor and delivery. And so I felt like I was prepared enough until I was 40 weeks pregnant, 40 weeks, 4 days exactly, and my water broke. So it was the slow leak. We confirmed that amniotic sac rupture. So I was like slowly leaking fluid, but I wasn't under stress, and the baby's heart rate was fine. And so we made a little bit of a plan. If I hadn't gone into labor in 24 hours, then I would go into the hospital and we would do an induction. And if I did go into labor naturally, then I would, you know, continue on with a planned home birth. So we went home with this strict direction to just like enjoy each other's company, try to wind down. It was really hitting home that this was like our last moment where we would have just the two of us and our dog in this house. And so we were anxious, excited, nervous. And that was when I started feeling like the, oh my God, I wonder what labor feels like. 9:30 p.m., I had my first contraction, and it was a very like traditional wave. So I felt the build, I felt the release. I, you know, went through the motions. And I was like, okay, I can handle this. And then quickly let my husband know, like, okay, so labor is starting. My mom was coming over and we were prepared for what was about to come. I gave both of them like the call sheet for the midwives and the, you know, we went over the birth plan and we're feeling good. And within an hour, I had all back labor, no break between contractions, really nauseous and something just didn't feel right. And so I, you know, kept saying to my husband and my mom, like, we need to call the midwives. We need to call the midwives. And they were just calm and steady. Like, Lindsay, you're doing great. It's okay. And at that point, my mom said, I think you're having back labor based on the fact that you don't have any breaks and it's just back to back. I had been given the instruction to not go in water. And so for me, that meant like, I shouldn't even be standing in a shower. And so I was a very cautious first time laborer. And they, you know, after some like pretty frantic, like call the midwives. My mom and husband, in fact, called their midwives, and we agreed to do a home visit. So they were going to come and check on me and likely transfer me to hospital just because I was having a hard time managing the pain. Mm-hmm. And so my midwife came over, checked me. I was only about 5 centimeters dilated. I was having a really hard time managing the pain. And, you know, it just goes back to like total unpreparedness. Like, I had read one book and had some conversations, but I don't think I necessarily understood the different ways that labor can feel. The thought of it being exclusively in my back was such a foreign concept to me and really unbearable. So we drove to the hospital, which is less than 5 minutes away. My husband asking me on the way there, like, you're going to do up your seatbelt, right? Like, I can barely sit down. I'm not concerned about my seatbelt. And so we get to the hospital in the wee hours of the morning. It's about 3 a.m. and we're waiting now for an epidural. And so I'm laboring and very vocal, in a lot of discomfort, still like a little bit unsure of like if this is normal, what I'm feeling, and not being provided with a lot of reassurance that I'm doing great and this is normal. And so now at this point, I'm like a little bit panicked, like, this is a foreign feeling. I don't know what's going on. I feel totally unheard. And I also feel voiceless. I'm asking questions and I just feel like I'm not really being given reassurance and direction. And so, of course, my husband being a first-time dad and first-time witnessing labor is also like a little bit of a deer in the headlights. Like, what is happening? And is my wife okay? And is this normal? And so an hour in, we start asking, like, where's the epidural? Where's the anesthesiologist? We need some sort of pain meds. And my approach was like epidural or bust. So I don't want to take fentanyl or laughing gas unnecessarily. I would rather just like go for the good stuff and get the epidural. I don't tolerate pain medication well. And so I was apprehensive about the effects that it would have on me, but also recognized that I was feeling like it was like an out-of-body experience. Like, I just couldn't handle this. I did not have confidence in myself. So around 4:30, I asked for, it was like one of those light bulb moments where I'm like, right, my massage therapist said, if I feel back labor, ask for the bee stings, which is sterile water injections in my low back.
Yes.
And so it was the first time I was able to like really advocate for myself in labor. And I'm like, can I get sterile water injections? Like, I'll take the bee stings, which are definitely a little bit more aggressive than a bee sting, unless I've just been stung by really lightweight bees in the past. But I got the sterile water injection and instantly felt relief. And at that moment, I'm like, man, like, I can handle this. Like, I feel really good about, now I started to feel like proper contractions, a proper wave, inching closer to 5. And so at that point, I'm like, okay, I'm handling this well. And I suddenly felt the urge to bear down. And so I went to the washroom, and as I'm sitting, I'm like, it feels like I have to poop. And so my midwife, I'm like vocalizing this. She's like, okay, let's give you a quick check. And so at that point, she's like, listen, the anesthesiologist is about to walk in. She gave me a check and I was 8 centimeters. And so she said, like, this, you're kind of at the cusp. And so like, you either get it right now, you get the epidural now, or you don't get it at all. And I was like, just blindly looking at her for like advice and guidance. And I was like, I guess I think I should get it. And she's like, I think that's a good decision. I got the epidural and I felt relief. But going back to like preparedness and not feeling heard. At that point, being prepared, like I was not prepared for an epidural. And so as I'm leaning over my husband, he in turn was also not prepared. And he's like, I may pass out. That is a very large needle. I'm like, just stick it in me. I need to feel some sort of relief. And then as soon as the, you know, effects of the epidural kicked in, suddenly I felt like there's no turning back. I've just made a horrible decision. And maybe I was handling labor okay. And I was starting to feel like some relief. And I was just about on the cusp of transition, because as soon as I had the epidural, I had like the hormone shakes and the sweats. And so I was transitioning naturally anyways. And so like the feeling of defeat was really sinking in. So at 5:30, and the direction was rest, you need to sleep, and we're just going to flip you on a peanut ball side to side. So every 30 minutes, my husband and my midwife would wake me up, flip me, and it was just like side to side with the peanut ball until about 7 a.m. At that point, I'm 10 centimeters dilated, and they decided to just like let me continue resting. I like felt nothing, so I didn't feel the urge to push. And then they said like around 10, 11, we'll like check in and like you can start pushing at that point. So at that point, they come in and say, okay, you can start pushing. And like, the piece that I missed in this was my mom and dad had come to the hospital to give my husband some relief so that he could go and have like a coffee and a bite to eat, because keep in mind, we weren't planning for a hospital birth. And so we were really not prepared. We had a small hospital bag packed and like, that was about it. My dad is asking my midwife team, like, what if she can't push this baby out? What, like, and he's kind of leading the horse, like, is what's going on? Is there something happening with her, with the baby? What's the next step? And they're like, no, she's had an epidural. Even if this baby is in a bad position, she can push it out. And this is the first moment where I heard the baby was in a bad position.
Yeah. No one said anything.
No one said anything. And like, I didn't realize that my water breaking early was likely due to an OP baby. And again, like it was just a gap in communication and something that was not, I wasn't aware of. And so my dad keeps asking like, but what if the baby's turned a little bit? Or what if the baby is OP? Like, nope, she's had an epidural. She can push this baby out. Okay. So we've now gone from home birth to hospital to feeling like really in the dark, really unclear about what's happening. I have this epidural that I've like am deeply regretting at this point, but there's no turning back. And it's time to start pushing, and I feel absolutely nothing. And so I push for a couple hours, no headway is being made. And at this point, there's a change in midwife and the midwife team. And so I'm with a different midwife, and she said, I'm just going to step out of the room, looking to my husband and I, when you see a contraction on the monitor, continue to push, continue to breathe through it, and I'll be back. And about 15, 20 minutes later, which felt like a lot longer, she came back with the OBGYN on call. And he, in a very flat and direct way, said, you're spiking a fever, the baby's heart rate is dipping and your heart rate is dropping. And I have incredibly low blood pressure to begin with. So he said, these three factors coupled with the likelihood that your baby is OP, we're bringing you in for a C-section. And I was absolutely gutted.
Was it like, hey, this is why I think a C-section is needed? Or it's like, this is what we are doing. You have no, like, did you feel like you had an option? Or was it like,
yeah, you know, so like, I mean? Yeah, totally. So I'm sure you can see like two first time parents who have gone from like a home birth to now being in a hospital to suddenly being told they're having a C-section, which we knew absolutely nothing about other than it was a major abdominal surgery.
Yeah.
And so I'm sobbing, saying, can we turn off the epidural? Can we bring down the epidural even a little bit? Can it like rip it out of my veins? I've like no concept of how it works, right? Uh-huh. And my husband is saying like, can she just push for like another 30 minutes? And very flat. He was just like, no, you are getting like the difference in time is 5 minutes to talk about it now and to open you up in here versus bringing you into the OR.
Wow.
And so like, again, my husband and I were just like looking at him. There was really no other option that was presented to us. At least we are grasping at straws. And he just, again, like reiterated very calmly, you know, I understand that this is not what you wanted, but we need to get this baby out now. And so they bring us to the OR. My husband is a wreck. We haven't been prepped for this procedure. So he's waiting as I'm like signing forms, and the amazing nurse is wiping my tears so that I can somewhat sign blindly. It's about 2-ish and we get in the afternoon. We get into the OR. It, like, we had gone from like a dark room with no windows and like little candles everywhere to this stark, sterile, bright lit environment. And a different anesthesiologist came in, and the energy was like so nonchalant in comparison to the fear and grief that my husband and I were feeling. The anesthesiologist was phenomenal. He spoke to us throughout the entire C-section at every stage. You know, he reassured us off the top by saying, my wife has had 2 C-sections beyond seeing this through my job on a day-to-day basis. I know exactly what's going to happen. And so I'll talk you through this. And so he talked us through it. He held my shoulder. My husband held my hand. And by this point, I maxed out on my epidural. I can feel my left side, and it was really traumatic beyond just the flow of how the birth went, but also being in this very sterile environment and feeling a lot of what's happening. But again, he was just like, the anesthesiologist was so wonderful and like coaching us through it. And really, I'm sure he could sense our fear. My like sweet little boy came out, was put to my face. And I turned and I was like, I think I'm going to throw up. I'm super nauseous. And I'm out of it at this point. I wanted to name my son Benjamin, which was not a name that my husband and I had discussed. And the anesthesiologist said, this is no longer something that you have to feel, and gave me a good shot of fentanyl and Gravol to really knock me out. And so 3 hours later, I woke up to my husband doing skin to my son, Miles, not Benjamin. And even from there, you know, I was just so, I was confused, disoriented, and a lot of pain and discomfort, wanting to nurse. Breastfeeding was really important to me, really wanting to bring him for a first latch. And even from there, trying to latch my son and like not being able to like sit up and bring him to chest and just have a midwife like take my breast and shove it in my baby's face. I felt like I didn't matter, which I think was the furthest thing from the intention. It was rather just, we need to get this done.
But still, I feel like such a lack of, including you in everything. It's just like things are being done to you versus with you. And so I could see how you were feeling that.
Thank you. Yeah, exactly. So we ended up having 2 days in the hospital and really focused on nursing and controlling what I could control. So making sure that I was walking as quickly as I possibly could. And we really focused on breastfeeding and getting my son on like every 2 hours nursing him on top of on demand, focusing on letting him get that like long stretch of sleep at night. So that's where I started to excel as a mom and really stepped into my own. But I carried a lot of trauma and grief from that birth. And there were many nights, like I remember the first night being at home, laying in bed, my son was fussing and my husband was walking at the end of the bed back and forth with him on his chest. And I was just sobbing, saying like, you don't realize how lucky you are. All I want to do is get up and walk my son back and forth. This is what I've dreamed of, and I can't. And so the first few weeks, like then also feeling like I was pretty helpless in terms of my lack of mobility and how sore I was. And it was just like a much longer recovery than I had anticipated and been prepared for. And so my last discharge appointment, my question was, can I do a VBAC? Can I deliver vaginally after a cesarean? And it was a very clear, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Your baby was OP. My son Miles was full OP, and he also was 9 pounds, 2 ounces. So he was a pretty big baby. And at the point of the C-section, he had descended so far down the birth canal that he was just stuck. And so the message was, you can absolutely do a VBAC, and in your next pregnancy, we'll focus on a lot of body work and chiropractic care and massage, some of those things that I was doing before. And the big one was diet. And I hadn't gained a lot of weight in my pregnancy with my son. I definitely was carrying a bigger baby, and that showed. But I was like an all belly pregnancy and very active. Like, we're talking hiked 15 kilometers at 38 weeks active. And I felt at that point like pretty defeated, like, okay, I must carry big babies, but for my next pregnancy and birth, I'm going to do everything within my control to have a VBAC, and whatever else is passed over to the higher powers. And so I, you know, continued on raising my little boy, really loved being a first-time mom, and we were keen to expand our family. And so we ended up getting pregnant a lot sooner than expected. We got pregnant when my son was about 9 months, and we just made it in on the cusp of when they would endorse and support a VBAC versus mandate or like strongly recommend a C-section. So where I am, it's 18 months is the standard. And so my babies were exactly 18 months apart. So I really, really just snuck in there.
Nice, nice.
So I'm pregnant with my second, and I just started to consume a ton of literature and content all around VBACs. If something was recommended to me, I did it without hesitation. I went for chiropractic care, massage very early on. I saw an acupuncturist. I did spinning babies religiously. I hired a doula and I followed her lead and guidance. I used her as a sounding board, and I focused on what I could control, which was finding my voice and using it and learning about birth and labor so that I could be undeniably prepared for what was about to happen. I also was really keen to have a home birth, just knowing statistically that home births for VBACs statistically are more successful in terms of a vaginal delivery. Unfortunately, my midwife team couldn't endorse that. It was just like out of their scope of practice. And so I did have to deliver in a hospital. And I just focused on really getting over those mental hurdles, so that when it came time to being in labor, all I would focus on was just my labor and what was happening within my body. So at about 37 weeks, I started to actively try to induce labor. And I wouldn't say like doing anything like drinking a midwife's cocktail, for example. It was more so just focusing on ensuring that my body was prepared for labor. And when my body was ready to go into labor, I was right there with it. And so I started doing acupuncture weekly. I was drinking my red raspberry leaf tea. I was doing my spinning babies, really focusing on inversions and body work for strong baby positioning. My baby was head down, but not engaged in my pelvis yet. And so I was like, I just want to make sure that this babe stays where he or she is supposed to be. At 39 weeks and 40 weeks exactly, she's a due date baby, I went into labor. The piece before this is I had started pre-labor at about 38 weeks. So for 2 weeks, I was in prodromal labor. Am I saying that correctly?
Prodromal labor.
Thank you. Yeah. And so I was like consistently feeling strong Braxton Hicks, and it was like manageable, something that I wasn't even really noticing because I was so busy with a 17, 18 month year old. But it was something like I was noticing like the feeling and shift in my body.
Let's talk more on choline for a moment. The RDA is 450 to 550 milligrams while pregnant and nursing. Though research suggests that upwards of 900 milligrams in pregnancy supports optimal perinatal and infant health outcomes, most prenatal vitamins contain 1/10 or less of the RDA, as choline is a bulky nutrient and manufacturers often don't want to increase the number of capsules per serving. Choline supports the baby's brain and cognitive development during pregnancy and after birth. Choline can be found through food sources like eggs and liver, which is amazing, but more often than not, it's harder to get the full amount that we need on a daily basis. Needed has created an amazing option for when or if you need to supplement, so you can do so with ease and confidence that you're getting the choline needed. Their choline add-on is dosed at 500 milligrams of choline chloride per capsule to help you reach your optimal levels. This is a form that can be used in research for optimal outcomes in mothers and their babies. Find prenatal choline and more information about choline on episode 406 and at thisisneeded.com and enjoy 20% off your first order with code VBAC.
For the 4 nights leading up to my birth, every night from 11 p.m. to 5 a.m., I would have consistent contractions, and it was this like the feeling of the wave and the build and the release. And by 5 a.m., they would just go away. So on a Monday night, we had called our doula thinking like, I am for sure in labor. My contractions were getting closer together. They were getting stronger, and this was definitely feeling more consistent than the previous nights. She came over, and as soon as she entered our house, everything stopped. And so we're like, man, like we've just been up for hours tracking this. Like, now it's to the point where I was like uncomfortable and couldn't stay in bed. And so we started talking about what I was feeling, and I was like, it just feels like something's tickling my bladder. And she's like, that, my friend, is a hand. She's like, I think your babe has his or her hand in front of her face. And she's like, and so that often, like a hand in front will stop, like you'll see that like start, stop labor pattern, because the baby just isn't in a position where you can actively go into labor. And so this was really the start of feeling so heard, being able to talk through what was happening and have a solution provided. And also like the validation of, you're not going crazy. You are feeling something real within your body, and it's going to be okay. And so she gave me some exercises and like very strict direction, like do these exercises, rest today, and let's see what happens that night. Let's touch base before you go to bed and let's see what happens. So we get my son in bed. We call my doula, and she said, okay, here's the plan. You're going to go in the bath. You're going to do this exercise where I like lay on a pillow and kind of let my belly hang and float. Laying face first in the bath.
Oh, in the bath.
In the bath.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So
you're gonna get in the bath. You're going to like relax. You're going to lay on your belly and you are going to like let it just hang. My tub was just big enough to do this comfortably. And she's like, and then from there, you're going to go to bed and you're going to try to get as much sleep as possible. And if at 5 a.m. your contractions are still strong and consistent, I'm coming over and we're going to kickstart this labor. Let's do it. Like I felt like we had a plan in place. And so I'm laying in the tub and I'm just like going over my mental mantras. Like, you are strong, you are healthy. I, you know, definitely watched my diet in this pregnancy. Not that I was like unhealthy with my son, but I was really strict with the sugar that I consumed and what I put inside my body. I was like, you know, your body was made to birth this baby. You can do it. And so I just had my mantras that I said over and over. I got ready for bed. I tucked in. My husband and I are lying there. And 9:30, I have my first contraction, just like my son. And it feels just like my son.
In so it's
all in my back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm instantly like, this is
triggering, probably.
Triggering. Yeah. It's happening again. And so I'm turning to my husband and I'm like, you need to call the you need to call the midwives. You need to call the doula. I need to go to the hospital now. And my husband was just such a calm, strong voice of reason. He's like, Caitlin, we're going to crank up the bath to a hot, hot heat and get you in it for some comfort and relief. And I'm going to call the doula. And so I get in the bath and I'm sitting facing the long side of the bathtub wall, kind of pressing against it with my knees up. And we're running the water hot. He's pressing on my pressure points in my low back. And he calls the doula and he's like, this is it. She's in labor. It's happening. And she's like, okay, well, talk to me about what's happening. And he's like now kind of like frantic, like, no, I there's no time for me to tell you what's happening. Like, she is in labor. And so he quickly says, she's in the bath. It's as hot as we can get it. I'm pressing on her back. And if you don't come here, we're going to the hospital. Keep in mind, I was pregnant during COVID, so our doula couldn't come with us to the hospital. She could only be with us at home.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, no.
So she gets to the house and it's now like 10-ish. And she takes over for my husband, pressing on my low back. And she's like, okay, you've got this. And she's like, you're doing so great, Linz. She's asking me how I'm feeling. She's asking me about the like sensation. And I'm like, it's in my back, but I do get relief when you're pressing on the pressure points. It's just that it's like now in like my back and my hips. And like, I could just feel like everything moving down. And so it's about 11 an hour where I'm now in this like tepid bath water. And she said, okay, let's get you out and let's make a plan on what we're going to do. We knew I had to transfer to hospital because I didn't feel comfortable birthing a baby without medical support in my home. And so we are standing in my living room, slowly getting me dressed. And she transitions to doing these exercises where every contraction, I press up against the wall with loose knees and she lifts lifts my belly up as I kind of lean over her. And the whole intention was just ensuring that we're working with my body and my baby to get the baby in the best position.
Yeah, like an abdominal lift.
I think that's what it's called. So don't quote me on that, but I'm going to guess.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
So
that's intense too for you.
Super intense. But like we're in such a good rhythm. We're like now, like we have a plan for every contraction. And like I have the rhythm. I'm feeling really good. She calls the midwives and she's like, okay, her contractions are 2 minutes apart, consistently a minute long. And the midwife was like, meet me at the hospital now. I've been in labor for like an hour and a half. And I knew things were moving quick. And so we hang up and my doula was like, listen, you are in charge here. We'll go to the hospital when you want to go to the hospital. 30 minutes, an hour, we'll get there when we get there. So like, what feels good for you? And again, it's just like that validation of feeling heard, feeling a part of what's happening, feeling like I am steering the ship. And so we decided that my husband was going to pack the car. And in the next like 30-ish minutes to an hour, I would be at the hospital. She's like, let's just continue to focus on like this really good rhythm. It's about 11:15. And I look to her and I'm like, I'm in transition. I can. And she's like, okay, like tell me what you're feeling. Like, I am shaky. My contractions are back to back. I like am cold and hot at the exact same time. I'm sweating from pores I didn't even know existed. And she's like, yep, so you are definitely in transition. And very, very calm. And she's like, okay, so like we should
positive
probably.
Positive things.
Yeah, she's like, we should probably get you into the car. And just like, so, and it's like, as we're getting downstairs, you know, I have that little pause in contractions and she's like, okay, so when you get to the hospital, like reminding me of all the things to ask for, like how many centimeters dilated I am, how, what station I'm at, so on and so forth. And so mm-hmm. I felt, I'm like feeling good about going, and we are like kind of waiting. And I said, okay, like, let's have one more contraction and then get me in the car and we'll go like straight to the hospital. So like, that's the plan. There's like a little break that I'm enjoying the relief in. All of a sudden I'm like, contraction, I get on the wall, they lift, she lifts my belly. I'm leaning over her and my husband. And just as she lifts my belly, the baby drops. And I use some very foul language directing everybody to get their hands off of me. And my doula drops to the floor. And she just looks up and she's like, are you okay? Like, I think so. She's like, okay, are we doing this here, or are you going to the hospital? I'm like, we need to get to the hospital now. So she like helps me out to the car, which I'm sure at like 11:30 PM was quite the sight for any of my neighbors. Cause she's like kind of behind me, but like also cautiously ready to drop to the ground at any second. And my husband is now like panicked in the car, like honking the horn, like, we need to go. So I get in the car, quickest ride I've ever had to our hospital. We pull into the labor and delivery room, and labor and delivery ward, I should say, do the COVID screen and get in. And so I go in first, but my husband has to stay back and wait. And so I go into the first section of the maternity delivery, labor and delivery ward, and they do the my midwife does my check, and she's like kind of scolding me, like, you said you'd be here in 30 minutes or under, and like it's been on an hour. And I'm just like calm, cool, and collected, like, what, how many centimeters am I dilated? I'm prepped for like an 8. She's like, all right, so you're 10 centimeters dilated, and the next step is to break your water and push this baby out. So she tells me to go to the end of the hall to the labor and delivery room. And she's like, I'm going to go get your husband because it is go time. And we get into the room and everything stopped. My contractions were like non-existent. My energy was different. Like, I no longer felt like calm and in the zone. I felt like edgy and amped up a little bit. And I was totally experiencing like fight or flight. And so they're like, okay, like, we get my doula on the iPad. She's FaceTimed in now. And I'm like excited and nervous, but just like my body has now just like totally stopped. And that's where like the doubt starts to creep in. Like, I don't know if I can do this. And all of the like literature about like feeling not comfortable in your space and all of that, I'm like, I just don't know. Like, I'm like out of my zone, out of my labor zone. So they break my water and I'm like, feel all the pressure of the baby being down. And I just keep asking like, so like, when do I start pushing? And like, there's not really any contractions. And so this is a very different feeling now. And they're like, oh, you'll feel it. Like your next contractions, if you feel the urge to push, you can absolutely bear down. And so about an hour and a half into being at the hospital, I finally start having consistent contractions again. Because I'm a VBAC, I have consistent fetal monitoring and the baby's not in distress and my heart rate is great. And so we just like carry on, and my contractions now are existent, but just non-effective. And so every fourth contraction between my midwives and my doula were getting me into like a different position to try to like get this baby. And like within the first push, they're like, the baby is right there. And I just wasn't able to push. And so like I am pushing, and they're like, my midwife is directing me. And so now she's like inside me, like pressing down, like push here. And she's like, you're pushing really effectively. And so it becomes a little bit of this puzzle. I'm fully dilated. My waters aren't broken. I do have contractions, but I'm not. And like, we're trying different positions, but this baby is just not coming. And so it's about 2 hours in. I'm getting pretty tired because it's the middle of the night. I'm feeling super defeated. And like the same narrative of, you can't do this, is echoed by a member of the care team. And at this point, I'm like, cut this baby out of me. Like, it is going to need some medical intervention for this baby to arrive Earthside. I cannot do this anymore.
Oh, yeah. And total doubt,
despite being very prepared and having such a strong voice. My husband was like, Linz, you can do this. You have worked so hard for this. He's like, I can literally see the baby. Like, you've got this. It's okay. You can do this. And then there was a student midwife and then a very new midwife. I think she had graduated like a year or 6 months prior. And they were like incredibly encouraging. They're like, Linzy, we're working with you. You've got this. You've got this. Every contraction, cheering me on. So the energy was so positive, but it was just like a combination of myself and another provider that lacked confidence that really took the steam out of the labor. And so now it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, 4 hours into pushing. And they say, like, we're going to bring an OB consult. And I'm like pretty distraught at this point. Like, I have no medication. I'm really leaned into like, I'm going to do this naturally one way or another. My husband is advocating for me and like such a good support system. I have two like relatively junior midwives who are like, you are doing this. And we decide, like, despite all that, we're going to call in an OB consult. And so by chance, it was one of my most favorite OBGYNs on shift that night, on call that night. And she was there to do another emergency C-section. And so she walked in and she's like, we go over the chart and she's like, man, like, she had done my consult for if I was a VBAC candidate. And so she's like, Lynn's like, you can do this. And she's like, you're so close. She said, here's the thing. I have another emergency C-section. You are not in distress. Your baby is not in distress. You're both doing well. So while I do this other C-section, your job is to lay on your side with the peanut ball, knees together, for like the 30 to 45 minutes it takes me to do my other C-section. I'll come back, and if you are not, like, if you're not progressing and you're still struggling to push out this baby, then we'll do a C-section. And so I felt like at that point, I'm like, if it goes to C-section, I'm okay with that. I feel like I've really done everything in my power, and like pushing for that long was physically exhausting and not rewarding. And so I'm like, that's cool. Like, I'll lay on my side on the peanut ball, as uncomfortable as it is. I'll bear down and like this, it's going to be what it's going to be. And so she leaves the room. I'm on my side. And she had said, because my midwife had kept checking and they're like, the baby's not OP. It just keeps rotating from left to right. So it was like my body, I just wasn't working in the right position to have the baby like tuck under and out of my, under my pubic bone and out. And so when the OBGYN checked me, she's like, absolutely. This baby just keeps rotating right to left. And so we just need to get it in like the best birthing position, which, let's have you lay on the side, like last ditch effort. She walks out and comes back in 45 minutes later. And she's like, oh my God, we're about to have this baby. Like right now, we're about to have this baby. And she's in full scrubs and walks back out of the delivery room. At this point, I'm like, where is she going? Like, I need her in here. And
you're like, wait, I thought you said I'm going to have this baby.
Yeah, totally. I'm like, am I doing this solo? Like, what's happening here? So my midwives laugh and they're like, no, she just has to release the OR team because everyone's on standby to see if they're doing a section on me. And so she walks in like 30 seconds later and about 4 pushes and my sweet little baby girl was born.
Aww. That is quite the journey, like during the pushing stage, you know? A lot of people would have totally been told, like, you have no option. Like, this is, you're going to a C-section after just even a couple hours of pushing. And then they kept giving you more time. And it's just, I just think it's awesome. I think it's really awesome that you guys had those providers in there to advocate for you. But I wanted to talk a little bit about that doubt, you know, that you talked about was creeping in. And it doesn't always just creep in the end, or, I mean, it can creep in all the, in all periods of labor and even before labor begins. But I think it's awesome that you had your team there. I mean, your husband's obviously amazing and was like, you've worked so hard for this, like, you can do this, and built you up. But, you know, what's a little piece of advice that you would give to our listeners? Because I think that is something that happens all the time. And it happened for me. I mean, I think everyone who has heard my story, I think I shared it, like, I was throwing the fit in the driveway because my water broke. And so I triggered. I'm like, no, it's not going to happen. And I just had this, like, total doubt. And, like, what would you say really, really helped you? Would you say it was your team? What did you do, you know, physically and mentally, just be like, okay, yeah, like, oh, snap back into it. Like, you know, water splashed in your face.
So it was a combination of having the toolbox, like, and building my own toolbox. So doing the reading, listening to, like, the VBAC link was on every morning and every night. I consumed podcasts and good news stories like they were liquid gold. And I read the books. If someone made a suggestion, like, I did it blindly. And so I felt like toolbox of confidence and support was built. And that was me. That wasn't anyone else. That was me wanting to know, wanting to be educated, and wanting to feel empowered and confident going into labor. And then that married with building the team that I knew would support me, so that when I had a question in labor, when something came up, I was able to not only lean into my toolbox, but also look to my support team and know that they had my back. And even when, like, to your point, when that doubt crept in, like, it didn't creep in on its own. There was a voice in the room, an external voice in the room that supported that. And it was the moment of my husband saying, like, you can do this, that I was like, oh my, yeah, he's right. I can do this. And also, I don't have to listen to her. And I can listen to, like, everyone else in the room that is validating, supporting me, and believes in me. And so that was, like, my two-prong approach to building up my confidence and empowerment. And, like, if something doesn't feel right, just continue to ask and lean into that until it feels like you've been heard and it feels like you understand what's happening.
Yes. I love that. Such great tips. Because it does. It really does happen. And yeah, like you said, it didn't just happen. Like, it was placed there and then it got worse. So, oh, I love that so, so much. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I loved it. And I'm so proud of you. And I'm so happy that you were able to have your doula there for a little while and all of that. And these COVID births, man, they're all so interesting to hear how they went down. But we're so grateful that you had your team. And Julie, is there anything you want to add or anything?
Nope. I think that sounds great. It's a great story. I love all the preparation that you did. I was kind of like that too. Like, with my first VBAC, I just did everything. Like, if somebody told me about a resource, I soaked it all up. I went to all of the birthing groups. I soaked up all the stories, just all of it. I absolutely love that. I think it's so important.
Mm-hmm. And I found that, like, for me, my close network of moms that had C-sections either hadn't had a VBAC yet, weren't interested in doing a VBAC, or had just gone straight to, like, a repeat section. So I felt like my personal network was really limited in terms of the resources and questions that I could ask and lean on. And so I just turned to online communities, like, so the VBAC thing being such a good example, like, if I don't have someone to ask, where can I find that information from other real live humans, not necessarily just, like, a book, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but that's kind of, like, where I landed. And it's so funny because I left, I mean, I, like, I left the hospital fairly quickly. So I gave birth at 6:13 and I was home by 2. And so it was partially due to COVID and partially due to the natural delivery. Like, let's get her back home and comfortable. And like, that night my doula came over to like check in and see how we were doing and meet our little baby. And the first thing I said was like, I can't wait to do it again.
Aww. Like,
you know, our family isn't complete yet. And yeah, I can't wait to do it again. And so July 31st, we're doing it again.
Oh, this year?
This year.
Oh my God.
Yay.
That's so awesome. Oh, congratulations. That's so awesome. So, so awesome.
Yeah.
Love
yeah.
It.
So, and like very similar approach, you know, I went in and went with the midwife team that supports me, that I felt heard by, and that I feel like the most comfortable with in our monthly appointments. Mm-hmm. I reached out to my doula right away, and she typically doesn't take summer clients, but I snuck in there, which was awesome. And yeah, we're just like doing everything again we can. Like, we have the confidence of success, of course, in our back pocket, but it's the same approach, like control what you can control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And we really, really do appreciate you.
Thank you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.